Leviticus 9 and 10. We're going to try to tie some events together here. Maybe some events that you've been familiar with, but hopefully kind of put a timeline together on them. We've been looking at the priests. We looked at the sacrifices, the tabernacle, and the priests. And we looked at the priest's calling and his consecration is what we've been, his clothing. We're looking at the priest's consecration. We spent most of our time on that last week as far as the sacrifices that were to be offered and the dedication of Aaron and his sons to be the priests. That's Leviticus chapter 8. And we looked at how each one of them, Aaron as the high priest and each one of his sons as priests, the blood of consecration was put on the tip of their ear, was put on their thumb, was put on their great toe, their big toe on their right foot, picturing how their whole of their person was to serve the Lord. They were to listen, they were to serve, they were to walk in the ways of the Lord and in the word of the Lord. And they've been through this. And then chapter 8 concludes there in verse 33, "You shall not go out of the door of the tabernacle of the congregation 7 days until the days of your consecration be at an end. For 7 days shall he consecrate you." All right? So for 7 days, that they were to do nothing else but be there at the tabernacle. They were offering certain sacrifices. They should have been reviewing the commands and reviewing their responsibilities and those kinds of things. But for an entire week, they were not to go, well, they're in the desert, so they didn't have to go mow the grass. Okay, but they were not to go fix the leaky roof on the tent. You know, they were not to go and tend to the family events or tend to their cattle or those kind of things. The priests, those that were of age to serve as priests, for an entire week, they were there at the tabernacle. This was their ceremony of their consecration. 7 straight days they were set aside. Every day there were sacrifices that were offered. And as a part of that, Moses was the one who was in charge of that ceremony. Okay, Moses said, "All right, do this, do this, do this." And he's kind of walking them through. But for 7 days, their consecration period is there. That brings us to chapter 9 and verse number 1. "And it came to pass on the 8th day." All right? So chapter 9 flows right into the same story. All right? We're in Leviticus chapter 9, verse 1. It says, "It came to pass on the 8th day." So we've completed the 7 days where they were to be there and set apart for their consecration. They were clothed, they were anointed, their sacrifices were offered. And 7 days they repeated certain of the sacrifices. In verse 1 of chapter 9, "It came to pass on the 8th day, Moses called Aaron and his sons and the elders of Israel and said unto Aaron, Take thee a young calf for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering without blemish and offer them before the Lord. And speak unto the children of Israel, and unto the children of Israel shalt thou speak, saying, Take ye a kid of the goats for a sin offering and a calf and a lamb, both of the first year without blemish for a burnt offering. Also a bullock and a ram for peace offerings to sacrifice before the Lord and a meat offering mingled with oil, for today the Lord will appear unto you. And they brought that which Moses commanded before the tabernacle of the congregation, and all the congregation drew near and stood before the Lord. And Moses said, This is the thing which the Lord commanded that ye should do, and the glory of the Lord shall appear unto you. And Moses said unto Aaron, Go unto the altar and offer thy sin offering and thy burnt offering, and make an atonement for thyself and for the people, and offer the offering of the people, and make an atonement for them, as the Lord commanded." Okay? So this really is Aaron's first day as high priest completely on his own. Okay, on the day of his consecration, he's been anointed, but Moses is still kind of in charge and leading the ceremony and everything. Now, God has given direction to Moses, but Moses said, "All right, Aaron, you go do this." So we can look at this is Aaron's first official service, if you will, as the high priest. And his sons' first official day, all right, their consecration, their setting apart, their dedication has been completed. They have been installed as the priests of Israel. And so this is their first big official service that they're going to have. And it's going to be a special one. He said there in verse 4, "Today the Lord will appear unto you." Verse 6, it says, "The glory of the Lord shall appear unto you." And notice again the pattern in verse 7 that Aaron was to first offer a sin offering for himself. and he was to take a calf and a ram. He was to have offerings for himself. And then he was to speak to the people that they would bring offering. Now, if you think about that, you got, you know, a couple million people, and there's one animal as a sacrifice for them, and you have Aaron, or even if you want to view it as Aaron's family, you have one family, okay? But it was, in many cases, the offering that Aaron had to offer for himself, like on the Day of Atonement, was a bullock, and the people, you know, a goat and a ram, that kind of a thing. There was a constant reminder that Aaron was sinful, constant reminder that he needed to be cleansed, and he needed to offer sacrifices for his own behalf before he offered on behalf of the people. I mean, it's a constant reminder to us that in whatever capacity we serve, whether we serve in a public ministry capacity or whether we're talking about leading a family, whether we're talking about personal ministry one-on-one, we must make sure that we're right, you know, that our walk with the Lord is where it needs to be and that we have obeyed the Lord ourselves before we can do anything to help anybody else. Aaron was to offer a sacrifice for himself. He was to offer a sin offering, which was, just as it sounds, an offering to receive atonement, covering, forgiveness, if you will, of sins. And then he was to offer a burnt offering, was an offering to the Lord of picturing dedication, complete dedication. And then he was to offer the offering of the people. All right, so if you go verse number 8, 9, and on down, we're not going to take the time to read all of that in detail this morning. But he basically, it goes through the steps. We've looked at the steps before when we looked at each sacrifice individually. These parts are to be burned. This blood is to be put on the altar. These parts get burned on the altar. These parts get washed in water. These parts are eaten by the priests. These are eaten by the people, and so forth. And so it lists out that Aaron did everything step by step exactly as he was supposed to do. Now, you would think, if they've been 7 days doing nothing but staying there at the tabernacle, that they would have been reviewing things, that they would have had their mind focused on that. And Aaron, no doubt, sensing the responsibility, he's memorized this thing. I mean, you can imagine, whether you're a preacher or not, just imagine that you're responsible for conducting a wedding ceremony. Okay? You've never done this before. But you get step by step instructions. You do this, you say this, you do this, you say this. All right. You're going to be responsible for that. You're going to go through and memorize it. You know, Aaron has no doubt gone through and memorized. Moses was his brother, and no doubt he was on him. Peace offering. What do you do? Sin offering. What do you do? Meat offering. You know, he was drilling him. All right, quote it back to me, making him memorize those things. Aaron had it down. He went step by step. He offered the blood. He took the fat and the innards and he burned them and he took certain portions and he washed them in water. He offered his own sin offering and burnt offering and then he went back and he offered a sacrifice on behalf of the people. So we have here Aaron's first official sacrifices as priest here in verses 8 and 9 down through verse 21. Verse 22 now, Leviticus chapter 9. And Aaron lifted up his hand toward the people and blessed them and came down from offering of the sin offering and the burnt offering and peace offering. Now, came down, what does that mean? If you remember when we talked about the furniture of the tabernacle, the brazen altar itself was about 5 feet high. Okay? Some of the commentators will say that there was a lip or a step, if you will, that was built in about halfway. Others, the more common one that I've seen, and I kind of tend to think it was this way, was that they would take and build a little ramp of dirt up beside the side of it. Okay, you're going to offer a bullock. Okay, you take the OCH or OCK off the end of that, what do you have? Bull. That's what they're offering. It was a bull. It was a male cow. Okay, how many priests do you think it would take to get a dead cow deadlifted up, you know, for a burnt offering when you burn the whole thing? Okay, so I mean, it makes more sense. They had a ramp kind of built up by the side where they could, if they had a larger animal that had to be burned. But that would make sense too if he's going to come down from offering the burnt offering. He was up there at the side where he's putting it on the altar and that kind of a thing. But he comes down and he blesses the people. And the reason I'm making that distinction is because over and over and over again in the Old Testament, high places were condemned. So this was not coming down from a high place in a pagan sense. where they built these altars that you went up by, you know, 100, you know, 20 steps or 50 steps or that kind of thing. But he came down from offering the sin offering and peace offerings. Verse 23, chapter 9, Moses and Aaron went into the tabernacle of the congregation and came out and blessed the people. All right, so the two, Moses and Aaron, went in together to worship in the presence of the Lord. Okay, as close to the presence of the Lord as they could be, they went into the tabernacle of the congregation and came out and blessed the people. Verse 23, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto all the people. And there came a fire out from before the Lord and consumed upon the altar the burnt offering and the fat, which when all the people saw, they shouted and fell upon their faces. Okay, so you have Aaron's first official sacrifice. And then we have the approval of God by fire. Now, fire has been connected in many places in the Bible with the presence of God. When God called Moses, what first got Moses' attention? Exodus chapter 3, fire. It was a bush that was burning but didn't burn up. And God spoke to him out of that burning bush. When they came out of Egypt, God led them, pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of what by night? Pillar of fire. You remember they got to Mount Sinai, and God gave the first version of the law where we get the Ten Commandments. God said, look, I'm going to appear to them and make myself known to Israel. How? When God came down upon the mountain, what did you have? Fire and smoke and thundering and lightning and so forth. But there is a connection here in Leviticus 9:24. There came a fire out from before the Lord and consumed the sacrifice. If we fast forward to 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 1, Solomon, when he built the magnificent permanent temple, he offered multitude of sacrifices, and he prayed a magnificent prayer. When he got done praying that prayer of dedication, what happened? The fire of God fell from heaven and consumed the sacrifice that was on that altar. You remember in 1 Kings chapter 18, when Elijah the prophet had a contest with the prophets of Baal. And the contest was, all right, let's see who's the real God. You guys do whatever you want to do, but you do whatever you want to do in sacrifice, but call down fire from heaven. Let's see which God answers with fire from heaven. They did everything they could think of and couldn't get fire to come from heaven. Then Elijah poured water over the sacrifice after he set it all up, and began to pray, and God sent fire that not only burned the sacrifice, it burned the stones, and it burned the water. And what I'm saying is that fire from heaven is a miraculous event. It doesn't happen all the time. There's another instance in Judges 6 where when God, angel of the Lord, appeared to Gideon, he used a miraculous fire there to confirm that it was the angel of the Lord speaking to Gideon, Judges 6:21. But the point is that the fire of heaven is a sign of the presence of God. And in most of these cases that we've talked about here, it's a sign of God's presence and God's approval. The glory of the Lord here appeared to Israel, and the fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering. When Solomon had prayed, there was fire from heaven that burned the offering. When Elijah prayed, there was fire from heaven that burned the offering. This was a sign of God's presence and God's approval. In the contest with Elijah and the prophets of Baal, who's the real God? Well, God answered. Okay? But here, imagine, you know, we're looking forward to, hopefully sooner rather than later, having an installation service, if you will, for a new pastor here at Maranatha Baptist Church. Now, I'm not sure how we would think about it if fire came down from heaven on that day. You know? But it would be neat to see something, you know, in a supernatural way. Right? Now, we don't expect to see that. All the examples that I've given you have been from the Old Testament. Okay, even in the New Testament, if you want to say that in the early days, as a sign of confirmation, you go to Pentecost in Acts chapter 2, and there was the outpouring of the Spirit of God evidenced in the gift of tongues and so forth. And then when the early church folks were gathered together in the upper room, there was fire, but it was not a consuming fire. The tongues of fire dwelt on each one of them, picturing that the Holy Spirit was coming to dwell in these believers now that Christ has finished the work, right? The closest thing we have to fire from heaven, if you want to say it that way, in the New Testament, was Ananias and Sapphira. They lied and God struck them dead right there. Now, there wasn't visible fire, but if you go back to the gospel, I think it was Luke chapter 9, the disciples looked at Jesus and said, "Lord, wilt thou that we call down fire from heaven?" Jesus said, "No, no, this is not the time for that." But in the Old Testament in particular, the fire from heaven was a sign of God's approval and God's presence and God's working. And here, this really was a seal on the ministry of Aaron and his sons. Okay? It's the dedication of the tabernacle and the dedication of the priest, but this is God's stamp of approval on the whole thing. It's all been done according to God's instructions. The tabernacle's been made, the furniture, the priests that God said have been installed God's way. They've been clothed as God commanded. The sacrifices have been offered as God said. And then God manifests His glory to the people. It's God's stamp of approval on what they have done, on what Moses has led them to do according to the instructions of the Lord. This should be a banner day. I mean, this should be one of those days that they remember forever, right? I mean, there's not just the examples that I gave you, we could count them on two hands and almost on one, the number of times that God sent down fire from heaven to burn a sacrifice or something like that. I mean, this is one of those unique events that was to signify that God had put His stamp of approval on what was going on. This was God saying, yes, these are the priests that I chose. This is the tabernacle, the place of worship that I've chosen. And I'm going to demonstrate that. The glory of the Lord, it says, came down and appeared unto all the people. How did that appear? Don't know. You can read a bunch of commentators. You can go find the Jewish writings, and everybody will give their idea. But everybody knew it was the glory of the Lord. When Solomon dedicated the temple, it says the glory of the Lord filled the house. Okay? But nonetheless, you get this fire. And then we roll right into chapter 10, verse 1. Presumption. And Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer and put fire therein and put incense thereon and offered strange fire before the Lord, which He commanded them not. Okay? I mean, there's no indication that there's a break in time here. There's a chapter division here. There's no indication there's a break in time. You know, this may well have been the exact same day. That's what I tend to think, that this story with Nadab and Abihu happened the same day. I mean, it's the very next issue here, so it's right on the heels of this day of the Lord. Now, some have speculated that maybe the excitement of the day kind of overtook Nadab and Abihu. Here in chapter 10, verse 1, Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer and put fire therein and put incense thereon and offered strange fire before the Lord, which He commanded them not, and there went out fire from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. Okay? So here we have what's supposed to be a celebration day and the fire from heaven falling and burning the sacrifice, which normally that burnt offering, even if you've got a good fire going. I mean, you put, let's just, for our own sake, say you take a nice roast, maybe a beef loin or a Boston butt pork roast, put it on the grill, crank the fire up, and you pay no attention to it, and it starts to burn. Okay? How long is it going to take to char that? Well, you can char it pretty quick. But how long is it going to take to burn that thing completely? I mean, you crank the fire all the way up, it's going to take several hours to burn that meat completely. So when they put this burnt offering, even though they got a 5-foot by 5-foot fire and they can feed it, that's going to burn a good part of the day, if not all day, to burn that burnt offering. So that would have been going all day with the burnt offering, except that God sent fire down and just consumed it instantaneously. Okay? But here, notice in the end of chapter 9 and verse 24 what happened. When the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the fat, which when all the people saw, they shouted and fell on their faces. Okay? When the presence of the Lord is manifested in a real way, that's the response of God's children. It's to fall on their face. Now, they shouted. This may have been a celebration. More likely, it was being startled. I don't know if fear is too strong a word, but here comes fire from heaven. Whoa! I mean, that's the natural response. They're people just like us. And then they fell on their faces. And then Nadab and Abihu went and grabbed incense. Maybe they thought this was the proper response, you know, to offer incense, picturing the prayers of the people in response to the fire of the Lord. But nonetheless, they did it without Aaron or Moses' instructions. And it says there in the end of verse 1, which he commanded them not. Okay? So it's very clear from the scriptures here that they were not acting on instruction. They were acting on their own intuition, their own initiative. And so here you got the people fall on their face before the Lord. And the Lord's manifested His presence in a real way, and the people are worshiping the Lord. And Nadab and Abihu thought they were doing a good thing. They went and got censers, and nothing was said about strange censers. They went and got incense, which God had given very specific instructions. This incense, this formula for making it, and nobody's to copy it or they'll be judged. Okay? Nothing was said here about strange incense. The only thing that is said here is strange fire. Now it's interesting. I looked up that phrase, and the only places that I could find that term strange fire was here, and then in Numbers chapter 3, verse 4, and in Numbers 26, 61. And in every case, it's referring to Nadab and Abihu. Okay? Strange fire does not mean that it was, you know, purple fire instead of orange, or it's not strange in that sense. Strange in the sense that it did not belong. It was strange. It was foreign. It did not fit. It was not appropriate. It was strange fire, fire that God had not commanded. Now, the instructions are clear in Exodus, in Leviticus, in Numbers. When the fire of God had fallen, then they took that fire from off the altar. The instructions were that when the priest offered incense, they were to take coals from off the brazen altar and put the incense on those coals. So they went and got their own fire from somewhere else. Maybe, just maybe, they got it from the pots over here where they're boiling some of the meat from the sacrifices, the part that the priests are supposed to eat. Maybe, just maybe, they got it from a good place. It didn't come from the heathen fire. It didn't come from the mixed multitude on the edge of the camp. It came from the priests, and this was from the sacrifices. But wherever it came from, it was not the fire that God commanded. That's the bottom line. God said, this is the fire that you're going to use. Now, to most of us, especially if we're the ones that are doing it, what is our response? It's not that big a deal. Right? Really? You're making a big deal out of this? You can hear your kids now. Seriously? That's not that big a deal, is it? You can hear yourself if you're calling the car. Really? I used the right incense. I'm anointed as a priest, and I got coals from this fire instead of this fire. It's not that big a deal. That's a natural response, especially when we're trying to justify ourselves. But it was a very big deal to God. And there's lessons here from Nadab and Abihu. God holds those in positions of responsibility to a higher level of accountability. They were the priests, and if anybody should have known better, it should have been them. It wasn't some random man from the tribe of Benjamin who may have been on the back of the pack the day they're reading the law publicly and he didn't catch it all. This was the priest. In fact, these were the sons of Aaron. Aaron had four sons before this day. And they were right there. Guess who their uncle is? Moses. Okay? They knew. They were right there. They had the official word from the authoritative source. They knew what God's commands were, and they offered strange fire. It is very, very important that when it comes to serving the Lord, we do it God's way. That we do it God's way. I mean, the whole concept of that's popular in, I will just say, American religious circles today, of this user-friendly mentality, or seeker-sensitive is another way to say the same thing. That we want to do everything we can to cater to people. We want people to feel comfortable. We want them to, you know, not feel awkward in any way when they come to church, and it's all centered around man. is not a biblical concept. It is a right heartbeat that we should be trying to reach people. We want to be friendly. We want to reach out. We don't want to, of our own rudeness, of our own Pharisaical rules, make somebody feel like they're not worthy to come into our church or something like that. But to take that to the extreme of saying it's all about making people comfortable and we're going to do things this way, no, the standard is what God says. And what may not have seemed like a big deal to us is a big deal to God. God must be worshipped His way. You think 2 Samuel chapter 6, David was trying to do a great thing. They hadn't inquired at the ark all the days of Saul, it says, right? And so they're going to go and bring the ark up, and now the worship of God is going to be restored like it should be. Well, instead of following the instructions as God gave them, what'd they do with the ark? They put it on a cart. Now, God didn't strike anybody dead for that. Okay? However, God allowed them to come across a path where there's a pothole or a rut. And it says the oxen stumbled. And then when Uzzah put forth his hand to touch the ark to keep it from falling over, was that a good thing or a bad thing? Human standpoint, he's doing a good thing. He's trying to protect the ark from being destroyed. Yet he put forth his hand, touched the ark, boom, God struck him dead. Okay, why? It all happened because they didn't follow God's instructions to start with. If they had had the Levites and the priests to carry it on their shoulders as the Scriptures instructed, you never get into that situation. But what we look at and say, oh, well, you know, he had a good heart, had a good motive, he had good intentions. For those that know better, and or those that are expected to know better, have the opportunity to know better, if we don't listen, it's our own fault. God said, it's a big deal. And so here, Nadab and Abihu wanted to go and do something. They wanted to go and do something spiritual. They throw incense and censers, and they're going to go and I'm the priest now. I'm supposed to represent the people. I'm going to go and offer incense representing the prayers and thanks to God for His demonstration today and for His acceptance of us and all of that. Boom. God struck him dead. Notice the phrase there in verse number 2. And there went out fire from the Lord and devoured them. Look at verse 24 of chapter 9. There came a fire out from before the Lord and consumed upon the altar. It's the exact same phrase. It's literally from before, from the presence of, from the face of. This fire came directly from the presence of God, and it's the same fire in verse number 24 that consumed the burnt offering. That in chapter 10 and verse 2, it's that same fire that consumed Nadab and Abihu. Okay? It's the same God, it's the same fire. The difference is the object. Where there was obedience and a following of God's laws and the sacrifice, if you will, the fire showed God's approval and His acceptance. Where there was disobedience and really presumption, because the key phrase there is at which He commanded them not, the end of verse number 1, they presumed, they took upon themselves to do something that God had not called for, and that same fire came out and became a fire of judgment. It's the same God. It's the same fire. The difference is whether it's obedience or whether it's disobedience. And for our application, we can either go to God in confession, we can either go to God through Christ and let the fire of God's wrath fall in judgment upon Christ. He took the payment for our sins. Or we can just go and do our own thing like Ananias and Sapphira, and we can have the fire of God fall on us in chastening or judgment instead. But here the same fire that devoured the sacrifice that was a sign of God's approval becomes a sign and a warning from God, sign of God's disapproval. Why make such a big deal out of this? Well, don't you think that Eleazar and Ithamar remembered this? Don't you think that's the other two brothers that didn't die? Don't you think that that was a story they told their sons and their grandsons and it got passed down? God set the standard. Here's my standard. And when it comes to the holiness and the righteousness of God, there is no deviation. I'm not talking about human standards, okay? We're going to talk about how long somebody's hair is supposed to be, stuff like that. I'm not talking about that. We're talking about God's standard of holiness and righteousness. There's a very clear line, and we don't get to decide, oh, I think that line's too strict, let me move it. God said, here's the line, this is my standard of righteousness, my standard of holiness, and they crossed it. God drew the line, and that could very well have been mercy. If God strikes them dead and everybody else listens, then it saves a lot more heartache down the road, right? However, we get down to Numbers chapter 16, there were some that didn't listen. That Korah and Dathan and Abiram, they were upset. They're still upset partly about this. But God was laying it down very clearly. Here's what I want. Here's what I expect from those that are my servants. And then notice down in verse number 3, Moses said unto Aaron, this is it that the Lord spake, saying, I will be sanctified in them that come nigh me, and before all the people I will be glorified. And Aaron held his peace. You know, Aaron, what is he supposed to say? God, what are you doing? He just watched two of his sons be struck dead. Put yourself in Aaron's shoes for a minute. He watched two of his four sons struck dead before his eyes. We're not going to have time to cover the rest of this morning, but he's not even allowed to go and bury them. He says, the anointing oil of your God's on you. Let your nephews and your cousins, let them do it. They carried them out, and they buried them. But God said, this is it, which I will be sanctified in them that come nigh me. Tremendous warning for any that have the responsibility of standing and speaking in the place of God, in a place of teaching or in a place of preaching. That's why James chapter 3 said, my brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive, what? Greater condemnation. There's a higher standard of responsibility on those in leadership. And he said, I will be sanctified in them that come nigh me, and before all the people I will be glorified. God said that my righteousness, my sanctification will be demonstrated either by them following my procedure or either by my demonstrating righteous judgment when they disobey and act in presumption. Now, which side of that do you want to be on? Duh. None of us wants to be on the side of the judgment fire of God, right? But now comes the interesting question. Do we hold as carefully to God's instructions as Moses and Nadab and Abihu and Aaron were expected to do? Or do we allow that attitude to creep in? Well, it's not really that big a deal. I know I probably shouldn't, or I know that's wrong, but that's the attitude that got Nadab and Abihu judged. We must be very serious when it comes to serving the Lord, being clean, being pure, and doing things God's way. Now, I'm very thankful that Romans tells us in chapter 8 that he's given us the spirit of adoption whereby we can cry, Abba, Father. Because if this is all the picture you have, you live in constant fear that God's going to strike you dead with a fire from heaven as well, right? But that balance is always to be there. Hebrews says our God is a consuming fire. And that balance is always to be there. We go to God and know that He loves us, know that He has accepted us, know that He treats us as His children and brings us near, but at the same time, we must never lose sight of that holy recognition, I say it that way, that we're not to trifle with the things of God. We're to be serious about living for God, about doing right, about doing things God's way, about clear commands of Scripture. We're not to just, that's a little one, I don't have to do that. So Aaron's big day got turned into a time of disappointment, but in both cases, God was glorified, either in the demonstration of His righteousness or demonstration of His righteous judgment. Aaron's first sacrifice, God's approving fire, the consequences of disobedience and presumption. Let's go with the side of taking careful heed to God's instructions so we don't end up in the Nadab and Abihu category. Lord, thank You for Your Word. Pray, Lord, that You'd give us that fear of the Lord that we need. I pray that You'd help us to have that proper reverence for You, and Lord, give us that diligence about Your Word and Your commands. And Lord, I pray that your hand of blessing and fire and approval would be on Maranatha Baptist Church. And we thank you in Jesus' name.